Lynn, I think you're doing the reading first.
Good morning, everyone. How is everybody today? All right? Please turn to Isaiah chapter 36. That's where we're going to be looking at today and reading from. It's on page 724. Oh, no, it's not. 719. There you go. That's the one. That's in the red NIV. Starting from verse 1, there'll be a bit of jumping. We'll be going from 36 to 37. So, in the 14th year of King Hezekiah's reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked all the fortified cities of Judah and captured them. Then the king of Assyria sent his field commander with a large army from Lachish to King Hezekiah at Jerusalem. When the commander stopped at the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to the launderer's field, Eliakim, son of Hilkiah, the palace administrator, Shebna, the secretary, and Joah, son of Asaph, the recorder, went out to him. The field commander said to them, "Tell Hezekiah, this is what the great king, the king of Assyria, says. On what are you basing this confidence of yours? You say you have counsel and might for war, but you speak only empty words. On whom are you depending that you rebel against me? Look, I know you are depending on Egypt, that splintered reed of a staff, which pierces the hand of anyone who leans on it. Such is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who depend on him. But if you say to me, 'We are depending on the Lord our God,' isn't he the one whose high places and altars Hezekiah removed, saying that Judah and Jerusalem, you must worship before this altar? Come now, make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria. I will give you 2,000 horses if you can put riders on them. How then can you repulse one officer of the least of my master's officials, even though you are depending on Egypt for chariots and horsemen? Furthermore, have I come to attack and destroy this land without the Lord? The Lord himself told me to march against this country and destroy it." Then Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah said to the field commander, "Please speak to your servants in Aramaic, since we understand it. Don't speak to us in Hebrew in the hearing of the people on the wall." But the commander replied, "Why is it only to your master and you that my master sent me to say these things, and not to the people sitting on the wall? Who, like you, will have to eat their own excrement and drink their own urine?" Then the commander stood and called out in Hebrew, "Hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. This is what the king says. Do not let Hezekiah deceive you. He cannot deliver you. Do not let Hezekiah persuade you to trust in the Lord when he says, 'The Lord will surely deliver us. This city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria.'" Jump over to chapter 37, starting at verse 9. Then Sennacherib received a report that Tehakan, the king of Cush, was marching out to fight against him. When he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah with this word, "Say to Hezekiah, king of Judah, do not let the God you depend on deceive you when he says, 'Jerusalem will not be given into the hands of the king of Assyria.' Surely you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the countries, destroying them completely. And will you be delivered? Did the gods of the nations that were destroyed by my predecessors deliver them? The gods of Gozan, Haran, Rezeph, and the people of Eden, who were in Talasar? Where is the king of Hamath or the king of Arpad? Where are the kings of Leir, Sepharvaim, Hena, and Ivah. Hezekiah received the letter from the messengers and read it. Then he went up to the temple of the Lord and spread it out before the Lord. And Hezekiah prayed to the Lord, Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim, you alone are God over all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Give ear, Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, Lord, and see. Listen to all the words Sennacherib has sent to ridicule the living God. Is it true, Lord, that the Assyrian kings have laid waste all these peoples and their lands? They have thrown their gods into the fire and destroyed them, for they were not gods, but only wood and stone fashioned by human hands. Now, Lord, our God, deliver us from his hand, so that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you, Lord, are the only God. Verse 23. Who is it you have ridiculed and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and lifted your eyes in pride? Against the Holy One of Israel. And then down to verse 35 through to 38. I will defend this city and save it for my sake and for the sake of David, my servant. Then the angel of the Lord went out and put to death 185,000 in the Assyrian camp. When the people got up the next morning, there were all the dead bodies. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, broke camp and withdrew. He returned to Nineveh and stayed there. One day, while he was worshipping in the temple of his god Nisroch, his son Adramelech and Sherezer killed him with the sword, and they escaped to the land of Ararat. And Esarhaddon, his son, succeeded him as king. This is the word of the Lord.
All is lost. That's the situation we're confronted with. How do we get to this situation? King Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived, they say. A great king over all Israel. All 12 tribes served him. Incredibly wise man. And he had a son who succeeded him, who was anything but wise. He was churlish and stuck up. And when the people asked him to reduce the taxes they were paying to a lower level, he instead increased them. As a result, there was a revolt. Israel consisted of 12 tribes, but 10 of them said, no, we will not be ruled by a man like this. And they withdrew. And so the great land of Israel was divided into two parts. In the north, as we shall see in a moment, were the majority living. And in the south, just the two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, who proceeded and carried on being ruled over by the king Rehoboam. Well, time went on, and unfortunately, the two sections of old Israel were at war with one another very frequently. The northern kingdom, where the majority lived, those 10 tribes, were idolatrous and turned completely away from following after the God whose center was in Jerusalem, as I would say. And because there was some risk that the people may still want to go to Jerusalem to worship, the kings of the north proceeded to put up idols. And what did they do? Well, they put one at Dan in the north and one at Bethel in the south, calf idols. You see, what you did, if you had a god, you put him up at the entrance to your kingdom, and they were the two ways in. So they had a golden calf at Dan and one at Bethel, and they proceeded to be in idolatry. There was frequently wars between the new north and south, and the pagan north often gave a very rough time to those in the south. Now, a new power arose. If we were able to see just a little further around the corner, we would see the great empire of the Assyrians. Tremendous empire with huge armies, brutal, destructive, and the most hateful sort of people to fall into the hands of. And they proceeded to attack from the north, and it wasn't long before they overcame Israel, the northern part of the kingdom. And so here's Hezekiah in Jerusalem, his capital in the south, rather relieved probably because there no longer would be attacks from the northern kingdom and from Syria beyond them, because the Assyrians had come in and knocked both those Asian nations out. But he wasn't entirely fooled. Hezekiah realized that it wouldn't be long, probably, before the Assyrians would attack him too. He was a wise king. And he thought about the prospects of a siege. Well, if you were in a city under siege, one of the most important things you need is running clean water to drink. So he diverted the spring of Gihon into the city. People used to say years ago that it never really happened, that was all legend, until an archaeologist in the 1930s, I think, discovered the route in which the diversion of the spring Gihon was taken into Jerusalem. My ex-senior partner actually walked along that route. Paddling in the water was where it came in, and saw the place where the Hezekiah's name was written in the rock over the top. Time and again, archaeology proves the modernists wrong. Amazing. Anyway, so Hezekiah diverted water into the city, fearing an Assyrian attack. And then, of course, it all happened. All is lost. We're surrounded by this terrible, huge, and violent army. Sov ki per was what the young pretender put it. Every man for himself. Well, in other words, all is lost. That was the situation. And so here is a city under siege by a most terrifying army. What do you do in those circumstances? Hezekiah was so short of soldiers that when the commander of the Assyrian army tormented him and said, "You haven't even got 2,000 men to put on horses if we gave you the horses. You're helpless. Are you thinking of getting an alliance with Egypt?" Well, Egypt is so unreliable, it's almost like a stick which a man might lean on for support, and it would just fracture and spit out a splinter which would perforate his hand. It's no good depending on Egypt. As a matter of fact, he was quite right, because the Egyptian army, led by one of the kings of the southern kingdom, nowadays Sudan, was defeated just 20 miles from Jerusalem at a place called El Teke. So the Assyrian kings and leaders were quite right. Egypt was nothing to lean on. What could you do in the circumstances? It's interesting, you know, when we're up against it, what do you do? Prayer is the only thing. Even heathens think like that. Ovid, could have pronounced his name, living in the early part of the AD, he said during a storm at sea, What is left now but prayer? Even heathens think like that. We know that prayer changes things, don't we? We sing sometimes, what a friend we have in Jesus, and then take it to the Lord in prayer. Tennyson wrote, more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. Where do we look in trouble? We turn to prayer and to the Lord who hears prayer. It's interesting then, we find, first of all, the Rabshakeh, as they was, the commander of the army, standing outside Jerusalem and looking up at the walls and saying all sorts of threatening things to the people inside, speaking in Hebrew so that all the people would understand, not in Aramaic, which would be understood by the leaders, but not by the common people. He spoke in the language of the common people, urging them to rebel against Hezekiah and hand the city over. Hezekiah had told them not to say a word in response, and they didn't. But the threats just simply go on one after another, and this Rabshakeh fellow who says, well, look at all the other lands we've conquered. Look at their gods. What do you think we did to them? Well, the Israelites inside the city would know, of course, that these gods that he was speaking of were only bits of wood and stone fashioned in various ways. They were not the true God at all. Nevertheless, here is the situation. Everything seems lost. There is no way out. And the mocking goes on. Your God is no more able to deliver you than all the gods of the other nations. Jehovah is helpless. Or was he? Well, the Syrians made a mistake. Jehovah's not like one of the earth's gods, but he's entirely other and different. Hezekiah and his fellow leaders, or his staff, as it were, all dress up in sackcloth, which is a sign of mourning. And they go in to see Isaiah the prophet and tell him the story. And Isaiah has some quite cheering words to say to them, actually. But the situation doesn't change for a bit, so Hezekiah goes off with a letter that had been delivered to him from the forces outside in his hands. He goes into the temple of God and he plonks the letter down before God. Have you ever done that? Have you had a threatening letter? Something you were very uncomfortable that might fall into your situation and your life? I recommend the actual procedure of taking a letter and spreading it out before God in prayer. There's no saying what may happen. And things did happen, in fact, as you see and know from the story we had read to us so ably by Glyn earlier on. Well, what now? Isaiah comes back with a word. He says, not an arrow will fall into this city. Nothing is impossible with God. The main army of the Assyrians may not have been round the walls. They might have been camped some miles away. We don't know, of course, but they probably numbered hundreds of thousands. Enormous army. But what we do know is that our God intervened. 185,000 enemy soldiers slain in one night. That's a lot, isn't it? It's interesting that Herodotus, the ancient historian, says, oh, the mice ate their bowstrings. Now, that sounds rather funny, but mice, does that remind you of rats? Do rats remind you of the Black Plague? Who knows? I'm not saying it was the Black Plague, but maybe it was. But whatever happened, the Assyrian army suffered a massive number of casualties in one night. And Sennacherib has to withdraw. In fact, he takes his whole army home. And in fact, maybe years later, but two of his own sons killed him as he worshipped in a pagan temple. There's something about pagan gods, isn't it? God had the last one. All is lost. Do you hear the words of two disciples walking along the road from Jerusalem to a little town called Emmaus? And one saying to the stranger they met on the way, "We thought he was the one who would deliver Jerusalem, deliver Israel." So sad. Can you picture with me a morning scarcely beyond dawn and see a figure of a young woman walking through a garden? Do we hear a sob? Do we see her grasping her clothes to herself as she walks along, heading for the place where she last saw her beloved friend? Face downcast, abject misery. All had been lost. She comes to the place she's seeking and finds it all disturbed and not at all as she expected to see it. Further misery. Abject misery. And then, through the mist, a figure appears. He must be the garden keeper, surely. In Greek, kephos is garden, and kephouros is the person in charge of the garden. That word only occurs once in the New Testament Greek, and it's in John's Gospel. The kephouros, it must be the kephouros. "Oh, sir, tell me, but who is it? All is lost. Mary." I'd love to have that voice. One day we will. Shall we hear him say, "Cynthia, John, Mary"? And all was changed. Our God is able.